It's a prayer that a Muslim can say amen to, a Jew can say amen to, a Christian can say amen to. It's an ecumenical prayer.
We have an urgent issue that we've decided to make one of our campaigns at Bush Radio prostate cancer, and the other one is domestic violence. And then the African girl child is also a focus of us this year. So every year we have one or two or three themes. So we established with Ohio University, we established the African Girl Child, the Institute for the African Girl Child. So now Bush Radio is the sort of African center for the Institute.
Do you know that St. Cyprian's, the girls' school, have had a program on the girl child, yeah, African girl child, and they've been doing some very, you should go and interview them there, St. Cyprian's, yes, in town.
As a matter of fact, what I will do is, St. Cyprian School, what I will do is we have an intern, let me explain, Bush Radio, you're aware of Bush Radio, I know that. We have interns from all over the world. Miko is an example from Finland. Yes. And Ronald was an intern from the Netherlands. Uh-huh. So we have from all over the world, we have interns coming. And now, right now we have Marquette students there.
Yes.
And I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yes, uh-huh. And we've got a professor there, Professor Judy. Yes.
So what we will do is, I suggest we will do the first couple of questions on prostate cancer. I'll ask the young ladies to excuse us for a minute, and then they would like to ask you their question.
When you say excuse us, you mean they should keep quiet? Yes, that's fine. Not go out. I mean, it's fine.
No,
it's fine. Maybe they're going to become doctors, and they may become urologists, and there's nothing you can hide from them.
Your Grace, when Bush Radio heard you on a popular radio station, when did you first learn that you had cancer?
1995, I think. Towards the end of 1995, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And my wife and I agreed that we would make it public, announce that I had cancer for a number of reasons. One, that people should know it is treatable, that there is life after cancer. Because so frequently, once somebody says, that person has got cancer, you know, we may mention it in whispers, because we almost always think that a cancer diagnosis is a death sentence, yes. Whereas here I am, I've still got the cancer, and you know, but I've had treatment which has sometimes made the disease go into remission. It was in remission for about 6 years. And then it shot up again, okay?
Thank you very much, Your Grace. Let me explain. I, too, am living with prostate cancer. Yeah. So, but this is new to me. I had no idea about the remission. I know my PSA is way down.
That's wonderful. Well, I had, when I got, I was told I had the cancer. It was very soon after President Mandela had appointed me as chair of the TRC. And Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York offered to treat me free of charge. And we agreed I would go. That was where I went. And I had radiation treatment. Actually, I started off with having hormonal treatment because they said the capsule was large and they wanted to reduce its size before zapping it with the x-rays. And I went to New York, and I used to go to Sloan Kettering in the morning, and they would give me my treatment, and then I would go I had an office in the South African consulate. They gave me an office there. So I was quite all right. I mean, I could work immediately after treatment and work for the whole day. I was there for maybe 6 or 7 months getting that treatment. I was getting treatment every day, and for 2 years, it was almost zero. They said it was undetectable. And then it began going up. 99, yes, I think, I had what they call cryosurgery, where they freeze the prostate. And I said, well, I hope that's the only thing they freeze. And for 6 years, I mean, now it's come up again. And now I'm getting hormonal treatment. The last treatment I had was, in fact, in 2006. So an oncologist said, oh, you have a good cancer, which is that it's not aggressive. It's very, very, very slow in... I'm very fortunate.
I have to ask this. How can we as Bush Radio better serve this campaign? Because our men have a reluctance. We're trying to get the women interested to get their men for testing.
I can very well understand. You know, I mean, anything in that region makes any man get worried. It's a sort of a kind of attack on his manhood, you know. So I think you must just go on going on saying to people, you know, women have been very good at detecting breast cancer because they've been taught how to check, examine themselves. And every sensible woman examines herself. I mean, they feel their breast, and if there is something like a lump, then they are very quick to go and see a specialist, an oncologist, and often it's benign. But if we could get men, especially over 40, actually maybe we could say over 50, if all men said from the age of 50, it's lower, it would be about 40 if there is a history of prostate cancer in your family, yes. Like you see, with my son, he would have to have started earlier. But if, sort of normally, from about 50, if you went to a urologist for an annual checkup, it's very straightforward. They can detect it very quickly. The earlier, the better. And the chances of a complete cure are very, very good. And, well, I mean, here I am since, 1995? It's, 13 years. I have very good doctors. I'm very fortunate. Perhaps, I mean, we ought to persuade the government to launch a campaign. And you see, they found that black men, not just in South Africa, in the United States, they found, I mean, in Caribbean, that black men are more prone to get prostate cancer than white men. You know, these things are racist too.
I once heard you say, when you get to heaven, you're going to have some strong words.
No, but it just happens, I mean, that men of African extraction, they are more prone. And so if we could persuade the government that this is a campaign that is very well worth undertaking.
You would support, for example, the provincial health entities coming on board for this campaign?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, in the end, as they say, I mean, prevention is better than cure. It is far better to help people remain healthy than, say, you are going to deal with them when they come to you and are not well. You will spend more. You lose more. A healthy breadwinner suddenly can't. Yes, he's going to depend on either handouts. Yes, I would say that is a campaign. Bush Radio should encourage.
Can I assume that we can count on your support if we go into this campaign?
Absolutely, absolutely, yes, yes. This is Desmond Tutu and you are on Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Africa. And he doesn't even pay me for saying that, you know.
Adam Asmal came and asked you to say those same words, and this was played in the House of Lords in Britain.
Come on now, let's hear the young ladies. They've been very patient.
Bush Radio has what's called the Children's Radio Education Workshop. And it started in 1996.
Yes.
And each year, we take in about 30, 40 young children.
Really?
From the age of 6 to 16, and teach them radio.
Yes.
And these young ladies can tell you how long they've been with. So, Didi, how long have you been with Bush Radio?
I've been with Bush for 4 years now.
You are a veteran.
If they've been with Bush Radio for 3 years, we will raise money to help with their scholarship to go to school.
Well, congratulations, and we pay a very warm tribute to Bush Radio for doing this because we need all these wonderful young people with their exciting ideas.
Each year, the young people invite other young people from all over the world. They had child soldiers from the Congo, from all over the world, to join them for the Media Kidocracy Conference. The kids. Media Kidocracy Conference. And they have it on Robben Island.
Really?
Maybe you can...
Let them speak for themselves.
We have an annual Kidocracy Conference where we invite children from all over Africa, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Congo, Sudan, and we get together and discuss human rights issues that affect us all as children. For example, we talk about our child rights issue, we talk about sexuality, gender. And this happens, and then we discuss it between ourselves and exchange ideas because each of us have different experiences and opinions judging from where we come from. So we get together and try to produce a product.
Tata, we've heard so much about what you've achieved and how many people you've helped. Now, was there any reason or did anything inspire you in your life to want to help people?
I had a wonderful mama. My mother was not educated. She was wonderful in her generosity and her caring. I resemble her, you know, physically. She was short like me and she had a big nose like me. And I often say, I hope I could also resemble her in her spirit. It was something I think that used to be done in very many families. I just remember about our own family that my mother never used to cook food just enough for her family. Each time she cooked a meal, my father used to quarrel with her and say, "You're wasting." But my mother would say, "Well, you never know. Somebody may come and we ought to be able to feed her." So she inspired me. But I've been inspired also by many people. There was somebody called Trevor Huddleston. I don't know that you've heard of him. He was a priest in Sophiatown, one of the great stalwarts in the fight against apartheid. He was a great friend of Oliver Tambo and Nelson Mandela. But he was one of the other people who touched me. And then we had wonderful teachers. I went to a high school in what was called Western Native Township near Sophiatown. Our school was not large enough to take all of us. So we used to be parceled out in classrooms that were really churches. And I remember that when I was in Form 1, we used to go to a church, full gospel church. Every time I go past there, I remember that in 1945, I was in Form 1 and we didn't have desks. We used to sit on the benches, church benches, and there were four different classes in this hall. There was one in a corner there, another class over there, and sometimes you didn't listen to your own teacher. If he was dull, you listened to the other teacher over there. And when you wrote, we knelt sort of behind the bench, and the bench top would be our desktop. But we had some incredible teachers who really inspired us. You know, in high school we had exercise books. There were no ballpoints then. We used fountain pens. And the one you dip into the ink wellness, and but it was wonderful. I mean, you know, when you think that it was a time when racial discrimination was at its height. Yeah, we had some wonderful people.
Okay, but I've got a question to ask you. People regard you as an anchor of Christianity and many other religions, and also you were the peacemaker in the politics in the years of apartheid. But now that seeing that we as the youth of today have many issues that we need to tackle, and issues such as teenage pregnancy, can you tell me, Tata, what do you think about that?
Yes. Well, in fact, of course, some of these are problems that are not new. There were some teenage pregnancies in our day, not quite maybe the epidemic that we've got. But then you've got to understand that there are a lot of pressures on young people that we didn't have when we were growing up. And I actually am myself quite amazed, not at the fact that there are children who go wrong. I'm amazed that there are so many who don't, like you. You know, when there's so, you know, in our day, when we were growing up, the only drug that they had was marijuana. Today, our children are exposed to so many, many different pressures. So I actually would want to salute you and say it is amazing that with all of these pressures, all of these influences that are not always good, that it is not that there are some who fall by the wayside. The most wonderful thing is that there are so many who don't. And I would say, I mean, you know, that we've got to tell people, we've got to tell young people, sex is beautiful, it is good, it's a wonderful gift that God has given us. But as with so many things, there is a time for everything. You know, you don't want to expose yourself to the possibility of becoming a mother when you are yourself a child. But we need to be gentle and compassionate, not harsh. We want to, you know, because if somebody, for instance, falls pregnant and they are not married, they are still young, they need all the support you can give them. It's not the time when you want to be harsh. They are already, I think, shaken and almost broken, and you want then to show them a great deal of loving and hope that they will not repeat the mistake.
You've won numerous amounts of prizes, such as the Nobel Peace Prize, the Albert Schweitzer Prize for Humanitarianism, and the Magubela Prize for Liberty, and recently also awarded the Gandhi Peace Prize by Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. How was your reaction and thoughts towards winning and receiving so many prizes?
I myself know. You know, I usually say, actually, when I receive these prizes, I say, I know that they are not given to me in a personal capacity. They are given to me representatively. Because, I mean, imagine now, you'll say I got the Nobel Peace Prize for fighting against apartheid. Was I alone? Did I stand there against this horrible thing, apartheid, alone? No. I happened to be accepted by the people that I would be a leader. But then what is a leader without followers? I mean, if I hadn't had many, many people supporting the stand that I was making, I would have been nothing. And so I usually say I receive this in a representative capacity, because they say when you stand out in a crowd, it is only because you are being carried on the shoulders of others. And so, in fact, I mean, the Nobel Peace Prize especially, they said in Oslo that they were giving it to me, but they were also giving it to the South African Council of Churches. I was General Secretary then. And they were quite clear that in many ways it was to encourage our people. Yes, I'm sure I'm going to be seeing you in, say, 5 years' time, and you are, then you CNN. Are, well, maybe CNN, maybe you are a pilot of a jumbo jet, eh?
Or
yeah, and I'm flying with you, or you are an electrical engineer, or you are a psychiatrist, all of these wonderful things, neurosurgeon,
oncologist.
Yes, you'll say, I remember we were talking one day, and Archbishop Tutu said, there's a urologist, and I meet you, and you say, do you remember me? Yes, I interviewed you. Okay.
Dada, one more question,
please. Yes.
Dada, what do you think the government can do to help us overcome the challenges and pressures that we children are facing? Could it be emotionally, financially? How could you think?
I wonder myself, actually, whether we should not seriously consider having a cabinet portfolio, youth affairs. They sometimes have that in other countries, but to have a department dedicated exclusively, really, to the affairs of young people, and that they should know that when they are in trouble, they can direct their concerns to this particular department. I'm quite sure myself, I mean, that that should happen. Because, you see, if our youth are destroyed, the nation is gone.
There's no future.
There will be no nation. And so we must invest in you as much as possible and remind you that the sky is the limit. Reach for the stars. Be all that you can be, the best.